Peter B. Collins News and Comment. It's Wednesday, January 9, 2013. I will scare the cockatoos from Kentar East to Yonder Blue. The western desert lives and breathes in 45 degrees. The time has come to say face fair. The world is heating up. Parts of Australia are on fire. And more than beds are burning.
It belongs to them. Let's give it back.
This is for Mark the Boat Builder and other fans in Australia, where bushfires are raging across some of the most populous parts of the country, feeding off widespread drought and high winds, plus high temperatures. There have been 4 months of record-breaking temperatures, and as most of us know, it is summer down under. Going back to September 2012, the government says that catastrophic fire conditions along the eastern and southeastern coast of the country are, in many cases, out of control. And in Tasmania, I've seen coverage of firefighters losing battle after battle, and the combination of high winds and temperatures up to 40 degrees Celsius, which is 104 Fahrenheit, are exceeding a mark set only the day before. And meteorologists have had to add two new color bands to their forecast maps, extending the range up to 129 degrees Fahrenheit. So this is just another instance, evidence of the warming of the planet. And here in the U.S., we have a report that the drought in the Midwest and the temperatures that we saw trending hotter made 2012 the hottest year ever in the United States, just like in Australia. And this is further proof that, and what do we have, 98% of scientists who are willing to go on record, that's climate scientists, say that, yes, human activity is warming the planet. And the average temperature in the United States was 55.32 degrees, a full degree warmer than the all-time record of 1998. And nationally last year, the temperatures were 3.2 degrees warmer than the average temperature for all of the 20th century. July was the hottest month on record, and 19 states set new all-time heat records. Yes, it's a very significant problem, and the world is twiddling its thumbs in general. Here in the U.S., Obama is announcing more nominations for his second-term cabinet, and we'll get to the latest in a moment. But in the in-depth interview posted today for subscribers at peterbcollins.com, longtime contributor Ray McGovern, who served our country as a senior analyst at the CIA, he weighs in on several of the nominations. Here is a clip from that interview where Ray McGovern tells about his personal knowledge of the man that Obama is appointing to succeed David Petraeus as the director of the Central Intelligence Agency. He is John Brennan, who spent 25 years at that agency before jumping into the inner circle of the Obama administration. He was nearly appointed to run the CIA right at the outset of Obama's first term, but progressives were able to push back on that because of his connection to the worst of the policies of the Bush-Cheney administration. Here is Ray McGovern on why senators will likely vote to confirm John Brennan despite his sorry history.
What they can do is they'll vote for Brennan, and they'll say, "Oh, we didn't mean that we approve of everything he did." You know, the kidnapping and the black prisons and the torture and the illegal eavesdropping and the drones that kill American citizens. We weren't thinking about that. We were just thinking, he's a good guy. The president wants him. And so, I mean, that's the way they'll dance around it. I mean, it's bizarre. This guy is poison. I know him. He was a junior analyst when I was one of the senior analysts at CIA. He was a failure as an analyst. And what did he do? Well, he did the same thing that Bobby Gates did. He wangled a job at the White House, okay, came to the attention of, quote, important people. In Brennan's case, it was George Tenet, who was the intelligence chief down there in the White House.
Mm-hmm.
And when Tenet goes to be deputy director and then director of the CIA, he brings Brennan with him because he sized them up. This is a reliable guy. He'll do whatever I tell him. And that's how you get ahead in these organizations. What happened was Tenet made Brennan his chief of staff and then deputy executive director. These are incredibly high positions. He was close to Tenet when all this stuff happened, not only the kidnapping and the torture and the black sites and the illegal eavesdropping, but also the things that I mentioned before, Peter B., the deliberate fixing of intelligence to justify, if that's the right word, a war in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
Brennan was there for all of it. I've checked with people who are still around and have said there is no way at all that Brennan didn't know chapter and verse about the prostitution of our profession, namely the profession of intelligence analysis, where George Tenet, the director, John Brennan, and scads of other what I call malleable managers put the screws to the young analysts and said, look, the president wants to make a war in Iraq. It's our job to dig up, quote, evidence, end quote, whatever it is, whether it's corroborated, whether it's contradicted, or whether it's non-existent. Okay? We got to dig it up and justify this thing.
Be sure to hear the full interview with Ray McGovern on the new appointments. We talk, in addition, about John Brennan. We talk about Chuck Hagel, appointed as Secretary of Defense. And Ray McGovern is more supportive of the Hagel nomination than I am, but he has some good arguments that he's outspoken, he's an outsider, he has criticized our continuance in Afghanistan. He is opposed to a war with Iran, at least that's been his history. And at times he's been willing to speak out about the Israeli influence on U.S. foreign policy and even comments that are going to be haunting him at the confirmation hearings about the so-called Jewish lobby. We also get some comments from Ray McGovern on John Kerry, an uninspiring nominee for Secretary of State. And we close the interview with some very strong comments from Mr. McGovern on the plight of John Kiriakou, the former CIA agent who has pled guilty rather than face a trial that would bankrupt him and he'd likely lose. He'll be serving 30 months in federal prison. And Ray, as a veteran of the CIA, deplores the treatment of John Kiriakou. Now, the latest confirmed nomination we've been hearing hints about for at least a month, Jacob J. Lew, who is currently the White House Chief of Staff, the fourth in 4 years, will be moving over to, if confirmed by the Senate, replace Timothy Geithner as Secretary of the Treasury. And I'm not excited about this. I don't know much about Jacob Lew, really, but his history is that he's been in government for in and out of government through the revolving door for many years, going back to the Office of Management and Budget under Bill Clinton. And he spent some time working for Citicorp. That's what we really need on the Wall Street Watch. And his first job with Obama was at the State Department, where he is the deputy secretary managing day-to-day operations. And then he moved over as budget director. And then when Bill Daley left as the, he only spent about a year as the office, the White House Chief of Staff, pardon me, Lew took over that job, made it clear he didn't want to stay in that position for the second term. And so the argument in favor is that he has detailed budget experience and that that will help in the deficit negotiations. But he is considered toxic by the Republicans. John Boehner can't stand him. And in the recent negotiations over the phony fiscal cliff, Lou was in the back seat so as not to rock the boat too much for this appointment. And here's just another example of why we need an outsider as Secretary of the Treasury. It is a relief that the board of American International Group, AIG, the company that we bailed out to the tune of $182 frickin' billion, is not going to sue the government. Now, Maurice Greenberg, who's the former CEO of that group, filed a lawsuit that was dismissed with prejudice, meaning that it cannot be brought back. But there was another lawsuit trying to get $25 billion for shareholders based on the fact that they lost during the bailout. And this is so insulting. And fortunately, the board of AIG listened to voices like Senator Elizabeth Warren, that has a nice sound to it, who spoke up very strongly yesterday in opposition to this gross effort to fleece the government for more money. And AIG is running an ad campaign about how they're so proud that they paid back the money that we gave them. But, of course, they don't accept any responsibility for nearly destroying the economy by writing insurance on these toxic mortgages. And then when things started to implode in 2008, they were suddenly insolvent. And no banks, no private money would come to their rescue. And the Bush administration, with the help of Democrats led by Nancy Pelosi, bailed them out without any Republican support, if you recall. And it's just amazing that none of these people have been held accountable. Obama has not allowed meaningful investigations or prosecutions of the clear wrongdoing that occurred. And the failure of the ratings agencies to properly identify the toxic mortgages, the failure of the originators of the mortgages to properly vet them before they sold them off. And, of course, we know that it is predatory borrowers who milked the system who are really responsible for this. And that's why it's okay to see millions of homes go into foreclosure in this country. And this is just another example of how Obama has disappointed in recognizing the real victims of the economic meltdown. And while this lawsuit won't go forward, and that's a bit of relief, the mere expression of this attitude, it just makes me angry. A defense contractor whose company, a subsidiary, was accused of conspiring to torture detainees at Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq has paid out $5.28 million to 71 former inmates who were held there and tortured. This comes out of the subsidiary called Engility Holdings, and they provided through a subsidiary translators who were there. L3 Services was the subsidiary, and they provided translators to the military, and they had more than 6,000 of them in Iraq under a $450 million a year contract. Now, I'm glad to see some compensation to the individuals who were tortured there, but again, we never saw beyond the sergeant or the captain level any accountability for the people who brought in the Gitmoization of the so-called enhanced interrogation techniques at Abu Ghraib, and the grisly photographs, many of which were withheld by a decision from President Obama early in his first term, nonetheless provided the evidence of these grisly processes. And so there's a little satisfaction in the admission and in the payments to the victims there. Another suit coming out of Iraq relates to the exposure of our soldiers to toxic chemicals that were brought there by KBR, a former subsidiary of Halliburton, and the no-bid contract that Dick Cheney arranged for them gave them indemnities, protecting them from legal liability for the use of these chemicals and many other activities that they took. And this is another gross abuse of the American taxpayer, not to mention the citizens of Iraq. But in November, a jury found that KBR was guilty of negligence and awarded $85 million in damages. Now, KBR wants taxpayers to absorb that, plus $15 million in what they say are their legal expenses. These war profiteers never had a conscience to begin with, but that our government permits this to go on is, it's just insidious. Joe Biden, the vice president, held the first round of meetings with activists about gun violence, those who want to see some new regulations. And it does seem like there is a serious effort by the administration here. I'll withhold judgment until we see what the results are. But Biden stated, the president and I are determined to take action. This is not an exercise in photo opportunities. But at the same time, he signaled that he is going to be flexible and that he's not likely to recommend an all-or-nothing package to address gun violence. That is a signal that the NRA is going to be able to water down whatever actions, either through legislation or through executive orders, surface from this initiative. And that's why I'm withholding comment, because I think intentions are good, but the power of the gun lobby in this country, and I spent 3 minutes on the way to work this morning listening to Rush Limbaugh, and there he was advancing the gun grab idea that any regulation is a violation of the Second Amendment. And unfortunately, he trotted out a soundbite from Attorney General Eric Holder that's ancient. It goes back to the mid-90s, when he gave a speech to a women's group saying that we need to change attitudes about guns, particularly among young people. And he used the term brainwash. We need to brainwash them the way we did about cigarettes. And I can hear that soundbite being amplified all over the place. And I give credit to former Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords and her husband, the former astronaut Mark Kelly. They are launching a campaign to change gun policies. And it's fair to say that Gabby Giffords was a conservative Democrat, not a progressive at all. And Mark Kelly, in a soundbite I heard yesterday, said, yeah, we've got guns in a locked safe at our house. We are gun owners, but we want some responsible gun regulation in this country. And I welcome their voices to this debate. It might help persuade some people who are not outright gun nuts that meaningful regulation can help save lives without grabbing the guns from the cold, dead fingers of members of the NRA. Thanks for joining me today for News and Comment. Visit my website at peterbcollins.com. And please subscribe. I need your support.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.